From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, public corruption is taking center stage and subpoenas have been sent out. I'm Katie Britton, in for David Gastina. Also on this week's Legislative Gazette, an upstate congressman unveils legislation to help engineering programs, while a downstate congressman faces protesters at a fundraiser. And farmers take on the DEC over dairy farm legislation. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The co-chair of Governor Cuomo's Moreland Act Commission on Public Corruption, Nassau County District Attorney Kathleen Rice, says subpoenas have been sent out and more public hearings are planned. Karen DeWitt reports.
DA Rice was at the Capitol for the third private meeting of Governor Cuomo's Moreland Act Commission. She says several subpoenas have been issued, but they have to be kept secret for now so that the ongoing investigations won't be jeopardized.
It's important for the public to know that we are, in fact, issuing subpoenas. The subject matter of them will be made public at a certain point, as long as it doesn't affect the integrity of the investigation. I think most people understand.
Part of the group's mission is to probe campaign finance records at the State Board of Elections. It has failed to even appoint a staff investigator for the past couple of years, and the commission would then recommend reforms. Rice says so far all of the subpoenas are for documents. No individuals are being compelled to testify before the commission at this point. The Nassau County DA says the commission may also be sending out more letters asking various entities to preserve all documents in anticipation of a probe. Letters have already been sent to the State Board of Elections and the State Ethics Commission asking them to keep all of their paperwork. Rice says she won't prejudge whether any criminal acts have been committed, but she says there are currently many legal ways to get around New York's campaign finance law limits that should be outlawed. She says the fuzzy ethical climate has led to the recent wave of arrests of state lawmakers.
You look at the paper, and it seems like every other day you see another elected official being hauled out of their home in handcuffs. I think people can get that, and you can say, oh, it's just a couple of bad apples. But what we're looking into is it just a couple of bad apples, or is it actually the vine that is corrupt? And is it the political system itself that is the problem?
To that end, the government reform group Common Cause has some suggestions of how to improve the system. They've been holding what they call Moreland Mondays. The group's Susan Lerner says each week they've been highlighting an example of loopholes in the laws that allow donors to give many times the legal limit to candidates.
A lot of what we research at Common Cause has to do with legal abuses of the money in politics situation.
This week, Common Cause focused on the real estate industry. They found that some real estate developers use limited liability companies, or LLCs, which are legal, to exceed the limit of $150,000 in donations for each individual, and instead some gave over $1 million in contributions. She says even though many of the real estate laws affect New York City, like rent regulations, the developers gave large sums to state senators upstate and on Long Island.
And that, to us, is troubling and raises questions about the way in which our campaign finance system encourages special interests to use campaign contributions to gain access and influence on public policy.
District Attorney Rice says the Moreland Commission has already announced three public hearings and plans to add even more this fall. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now is Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, a federal appeals court says former New York Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno can be tried on 2 counts of mail fraud, despite his claims it would constitute double jeopardy. The Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said that a lower court was right to deny Bruno's request to drop the charges. The same appeals court previously tossed out Bruno's December 2009 mail fraud conviction. That jury had acquitted Bruno of 5 other counts and failed to reach a verdict on another. Your thoughts?
I think it's enough with Bruno already. I mean, I think he's, 85 years old. There is a sense around Albany that because our morality, our ethics in the state legislature have grown, are so low, that what you want to do is really put the pedal to the metal to make sure that anybody who you catch goes to jail. Now, Bruno is an older guy. It was not the case of all cases, but what it showed was that Bruno may have been giving special favors to a man who Bruno sold a horse to, and he paid very little money for what my friend Rick Smith always says is a sort of a worthless horse. And then the guy comes on the stand and he says, yeah, I expected some other favors for him. Well, that's the kind of generalized corruption that you see. It's often regarded in Albany as legal corruption as opposed to illegal corruption, where you get a microphone in front of a guy saying, if you do this, then I'll do this. So he gets convicted, Bruno, on something called theft of honest services. But the Supreme Court said, oh, no, that's too broad a category, so we're throwing everything out. Then the feds do something that you don't see very often. They came after him yet again. Now, there is just a sense that leave him alone, you know, it's enough already. But to add pressure, his daughter is being sued for a no-show job at the state university at one of their offshoots, and so what happens is that this is a full press deal. I personally think it's enough. He's suffered for years and years and years. There'll be all kinds of appeals. The guy's 85 years old. I say leave him alone already. The feds obviously don't agree.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Katie Britton. New York Congressman Paul Tonko has unveiled legislation designed to introduce and strengthen engineering programs at schools across the country. Lucas Willard has more.
Here we go.
Tonko, a New York Democrat, visited with school officials and students with the Ballston Spa High School robotics team Monday. The students were working together as part of a summer camp activity to program small robots to perform simple tasks such as following a line on the floor or moving around the perimeter of a table. Eighth grader Kate Wheeler is a member of the robotics team.
There's more than one way to measure to go forward, but to be exact, we measured in what's called rotations, which is how many times this wheel turns. So that was pretty accurate, and then you have to make sure you have an exact 90-degree turn, which we measured in seconds to do that. And so the object was just to stay outside of the square and go all the way around it.
Tonko announced a new piece of legislation he's introduced in the House of Representatives, known as the Educating Tomorrow's Engineers Act. Tonko, an engineer by trade and former president of the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, said the work being displayed by students at the Robotics Club was just one example of what he'd like to see in schools across the country.
Introduction of engineering materials, engineering hands-on opportunities, those moments are important, and that can spark the interest in a career path that can then strengthen our belief and our hope that will produce the engineers and scientists that we rightfully require.
The Educating Tomorrow's Engineers Act would require schools to integrate engineering into their baseline science educational curriculums. Congressman Tonko again.
We take the baseline science standards and we require that they include STEM, engineering has been left out of that traditional standard approach. This will enable us to empower the whole process by requiring engineering curriculum to be developed as a baseline. And then states will be given the flexibility to further develop that.
States would be required to ensure engineering concepts are integrated into science standards, but a separate set of standards specifically for engineering would not be mandated. Under the bill, states would have access to federal funding through state assessment grants under the Federal Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Other federal assistance would be provided through the ESEA's Teacher and Principal Training and Recruitment Fund to support professional development and instructional materials. Tonko said he also hoped the bill would encourage private-public partnerships between industry and school districts. Cliff Annis, vice president of Glenville, New York-based Applied Robotics, said that he was impressed by the students.
And I'm watching all the things that are happening here, pretty exciting, because our company is an engineering-based company. And all the things that all these mechanisms and all this stuff, I says, if our people had the basis for that engineering experience, it's pretty exciting to see what's going on here.
Superintendent of the Ballston Spa Central School District, Joseph P. Dragoni, embraced the bill while surrounded by students and their robots.
It's a fabulous opportunity for us to embrace legislation that will continue to move this agenda and provide the best experiences for our students.
Tonko's Educating Tomorrow's Engineers Act is co-sponsored by Massachusetts Democratic Congressman Joseph Kennedy III, and a version has also been introduced in the Senate by New York Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand. I'm Lucas Willard.
U.S. House Speaker John Boehner headlined a fundraiser for New York Congressman Chris Gibson Tuesday evening. The Sullivan County event drew about 75 protesters who gathered to tell the two Republicans that their votes are hurting working families. Allison Dunn reports.
No justice!
No peace!
No food!
No peace!
No Medicare!
No peace!
No Social Security!
No peace!
No immigration reform!
No peace!
We got to beat back!
Community group members and other residents stood across the street from the former headquarters of Cablevision Industries, where founder Alan Gary and his wife Sandra hosted Speaker Boehner, along with people who paid as much as $2,600 to attend. Many of the protesters, including Kingston-based social worker and community organizer Arthur Zakowitz, said the attraction was an opportunity to get Boehner's attention.
So I think it's Boehner that a lot of people are here for, because you know, he really represents, he's the face of what's wrong in Washington right now.
Kat Fisher is a community organizer with Citizen Action in the Hudson Valley.
Speaker Boehner, Congressman Gibson, and Republicans in Washington are clearly out of touch with what's happening here in the Hudson Valley. Instead of creating jobs, investing in our communities, giving kids a head start, fixing our broken immigration system, and protecting our environment, their extreme Washington politics are dividing this country.
Though it was not the first time Boehner had attended a fundraiser for Gibson, Gibson says it reportedly was the first time Boehner had ever visited Sullivan County and the first time a House Speaker had ever visited the county. Tuesday's event raised more than $100,000 for Gibson's 2014 re-election campaign, with 90% of the attendees from Gibson's 19th district, which stretches across 11 counties. Invitations to the fundraiser were accompanied by a letter from Gibson citing a potential challenge from a near billionaire. That would be Sean Eldridge, Democrat and Ulster County resident and founder of Kingston-based Hudson River Ventures. In Gibson's letter, he says the funds would help him rebut the negative attacks that are coming and win decisively again. Here's Gibson after the fundraiser.
We have to be able to raise the resources to compete. I mean, Allison, you saw what happened last fall. I mean, you saw the campaign. I mean, look, it's a reality. I mean, I don't like it. But if you want to make a difference in a democracy, you've got to get in.
Kathleen Taylor, who works for Ulster BOCES and is a teachers union member, says she wants to give Gibson the benefit of the doubt, but has reservations.
What my fear is when I see Congressman Gibson with Boehner is that ultra-conservatism will start to really rear its head, and I'm afraid of that.
Mary Clark is regional director of the Southern Tier for Citizen Action. After the protest, she was planning to continue to deliver her message in Binghamton, where she says Boehner was headed to dine in one of the area's finer restaurants. First, though, she had a message for Gibson.
And I wish he would get out of his car and actually come talk to real people. People were here today talking how vital these programs are to them personally and about the budget cuts, how people are losing their jobs, Head Starts are laying off teachers. It's just a nightmare out here. And instead, he's up there talking to people who can pay $2,500 a plate. And he's not talking to the real people who are feeling the real pain.
Gibson says he was unable to stop because of meetings, but his door has been and continues to be open.
I have met with the folks of Citizens Action on a number of occasions, and I saw some very familiar faces out there. Yes, indeed, my schedule. I had meetings up here that I had to get to, so I wasn't able to stop then, but my door is open, and I have more open time this month. So I say to folks who want to meet with me, I'm routinely holding meetings in my local offices. So please reach out. You can do so by calling my scheduler at 202-225-5614. Again, 202-225-5614. And I would look forward to that meeting.
Fundraiser Alan Gary also founded Bethelwood Center for the Arts as part of an effort to stimulate growth in Sullivan County. Congressman Gibson says he is all the more humbled by Gary's hosting the fundraiser. Gary had previously supported Democratic Congressman Maurice Hinchey, who retired earlier this year. Despite cries from protesters that he votes lockstep with Speaker Boehner, Gibson points out he has voted independently roughly one quarter of the time. Nevertheless, protesters say he and Boehner should be raising taxes on corporations and the wealthy and steering clear of budget cuts that hurt the rest of the population.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Katie Britton. A coalition of New York State environmental groups filed a lawsuit against the state's environmental regulators in July. The groups claim that the Department of Environmental Conservation violated environmental law when it loosened the regulation of dairy farms. And as the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reports, the state's very public support of the yogurt industry may have hit a roadblock.
During a highly publicized yogurt summit last year in Albany, Governor Andrew Cuomo praised the spirit behind the industry in New York.
And that entrepreneurial spirit is when you see an opportunity, grab it and make it happen.
And at the yogurt summit, it was New York's small dairy farmers who saw an opportunity. One problem for yogurt production is a shortage of locally produced milk. And as one farmer explained to the gathered officials, regulations were the cause.
It will cost us $2,400 per cow to implement the regs.
Carrie Adams is a dairy farmer in Ontario County. She says she's limiting a planned expansion from 60 cows to 199 because any more animals would trigger waste management regulations. Last year in New York, a dairy farm with 200 to 699 cows was labeled a medium-sized concentrated animal feeding operation, or CAFO. That meant the farmer had to submit an expert-prepared waste management plan to the state. And that's what would have cost Adams $2,400 per cow. So officials at the Albany Yogurt Summit huddled off to the side, and a decision was made.
We're immediately increasing the animal threshold required for a CAFO permit from 200 to 300.
That was Cuomo's Agriculture Commissioner, Daryl Obertein. Cuomo would later say that it wasn't a done deal and that proper procedures had to be followed. But sure enough, the change was made in April, and farms with between 200 and 299 cows no longer have to submit costly waste management plans. Bill Cook is from the Citizens Campaign for the Environment, one of the groups suing the DEC over the rule change. He says the only question now is when the next large spill will happen.
I'm shocked today. I've been shocked for months. I don't understand who thought this was a good idea. I don't understand who thought that they wouldn't get sued.
It was a lawsuit brought by Cook's Group in the 1990s that led to New York's waste permitting requirement in the first place. The New York Farm Bureau's Kathy Morell says that with or without regulations, farmers need to control how they apply manure.
There's something called an agronomic rate where you know a farmer knows his land and how much the land can take up at certain periods of time, which is healthy for the soil and healthy for his crop, which is what he wants.
Morell added that the rule change is needed to maintain the viability of family-owned dairy farms.
New York State's CAFO program is one of the most rigorous in the country. It also makes it one of the most expensive to actually come up to full compliance.
According to Cornell University, there are 855 farms in New York operating below the old threshold of 200 cows. The state estimates that in the first year under the new rules, 50 of those farms will expand beyond the old threshold. Kate Hudson is the Watershed Program Director at Riverkeeper, part of the coalition suing the DEC. She says the state changed the rule way too quickly.
What the state could have done and should have done was to find financial resources to support these medium-sized dairy farmers in putting in place the protections that are necessary to protect everybody's water quality.
The lawsuit seeks the reinstatement of the old regulations. The plaintiffs have asked for a court appearance in September. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richmond for WSKG. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richmond for the Innovation Trail.
Reporting by the Innovation Trail is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Visit innovationtrail.org. With this week's Legislative Notebook, I'm Katie Britton. A New York law has been amended to limit subpoenas in civil lawsuits for records about people who aren't directly involved in the litigation. The amendment to the state's civil practice law, signed last week by Governor Cuomo, applies to both pending lawsuits and new ones. It gives non-parties to a lawsuit the right to object to having their information gathered in the search for evidence. For example, bank customers can ask a judge to shield their account information in subpoenas of the bank's records. State officials are defending New York's Medicaid program as a congressional panel questions why an audit of a visiting nurses group has taken years. The panel has also suggested the Cuomo administration may have improperly intervened in the issue, which state officials deny. One of the key Senate players in the push to overhaul America's immigration system is voicing fresh confidence that an accommodation can be reached with the House. Senator Chuck Schumer says it's okay with him if the House sticks with its piecemeal approach, as long as it can be reconciled with the version the Senate has passed. The New York Democrat told CNN in an interview that we would much prefer the comprehensive bill, but any way the House can get there is all right with us. He adds that things are moving in the right direction. Schumer said a bill taking shape in the House are very similar to our bill, but he said the final product must include some path to citizenship for people living here illegally. The Cuomo administration is sticking to its claims a projected tax incentive for companies moving to New York won't cost the state revenue and will spur community growth. A budget projection released last week showed the proposal would trim $323 million in state revenues over 3 years. State officials are offering $75 million in grant money to 23 counties to upgrade their emergency communication systems. The eligible counties, which did not share in two previous rounds of funding, can apply for up to $6 million. And the city of Niagara Falls is letting residents buy neighboring city-owned vacant lots at low prices in hopes of getting them back on the tax rolls. The city council recently approved the first sales under the new Niagara Falls open house program, selling five lots for $100 to $500 apiece. Niagara Falls owns about 600 vacant lots following years of population declines. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Katie Britton. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of this program are available by calling 800-323-9262. That number again is 800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1332. Or you can listen or podcast the program at wamc.org. And join us next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics with David Gustina. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Katie Britton.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.